Welcome everybody back from holidays. As sort of tradition, we selfishly talk about ourselves first.
For a second or two. Well, you're talking for yourself here, because I didn't really have much of a holiday. So if I look terrible on camera, it's just because I'm tired, okay? And I'm generally always tired, but yeah. It's been a long year. Excited for 2025. I think it's going to be a different year from us as well. We're going to spice some things up a little bit.
Yeah.
But excited for the new year.
Yeah, and a big thank you to everybody that's watched this. We are under no illusion as to who we are. We are not the ultimate show destination in the world. We are a small little South African show in South Africa that pushes out content with not too much strategy behind it. Like I just said to Kieran, that we'll introduce now, we prep for things, and that's how we show respect to the viewers. But we're still just a bunch of oaks trying to make it work.
With day jobs.
With day jobs. and we are, you know, things like Dave Usendorf's golf channel that was launched, that I think it was about 2 months ago. You know, that's incredible to see, and he's getting some nice traction on it.
And there's some other guys now starting to pop
big
up around
the... I can't wait to go into that social media and YouTube type of golfers and content.
Yeah.
We've even got Lyle, you won't see his face here today, but also planning some incredible stuff on simulation golf, virtual golf and
tournaments. And... for schools, and let's leave it in his hands.
In his hands, but there's exciting stuff coming up in South Africa for golf at the moment, and what better way to start this year with an absolute incredible guest?
Yes, I'm super Kieran excited.
Van Wyk, welcome to our show.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Such a pleasure. And thank you for making the time, because I know you're off to the States again.
Yes, in a couple of days, I fly out on Sunday.
Fly around Sunday, so we're getting you just before you leave. But before we go into anything else, there's something that struck a chord with me, and I think a lot of South Africans would. But just take us a little bit to where this started for you.
Yeah, so my golf journey started when I was about 4.5 years old. My dad picked up the game first. I have an older brother as well, Keelan Van Wyk.
Keelan, yeah.
He plays on tour too. He at the time was about 7. As I said, I was 4.5. And yeah, my dad picked up the game first, and we were home one day, and he came with a set of clubs, and he was messing around in the garden trying to figure out like how to play golf, chipping around, eating some balls in the garden. And myself and Keelan were really intrigued by this new sport, something that we've never really heard of. At the time, we were big lovers, and we still are lovers of football, soccer.
Hope you're a Man United supporter.
I am.
But you had to give up that dream. You had to make a choice.
Yeah. So, yeah, it started then, and my dad, as I said, got into the game. He got a few David Ledbetter videos. He would put them up in our lounge back home, and we were intrigued by the game, and we watched a few videos with him. Every night before we went to bed, once our homework was done and we had dinner, that's what we did. And slowly but surely, he got us our own golf clubs. I remember starting out with a little Tiger set, an orange little Tiger set that had about just a driver, a putter, and a wedge. And yeah, that's how we started. We broke a few windows in the garden as we started, and we learned. And then we joined a club called Durban Deep. Don't know if you're familiar.
No, not at all.
I don't think it's still an established club right now, but it's out in the West. Johan Wolfhard was my coach.
Oh, Johan Wolfhard. He's got a coaching academy that side of town now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was my coach growing up from, as I said, five years old. And yeah, that's where it all started.
And quite an interesting thing, what was mentioned also, is that your dad put a PGA event on the one day in your lounge, and he was like, I need you to see this guy. And it was Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming a little bit here for you, but it sort of took over from there?
Yeah, Tiger's always been a big inspiration for any young golfers. I'm sure you guys too. But
yeah, for sure.
He's a phenomenal player. And yeah, I can't really recall what tournament it was, but it was a PGA Tour event. It's a couple of years back.
Yeah.
Don't really remember what it was, but that's really what set it off for the both of us. And we decided to take up the game of golf.
And the reason that was an important, that I'll keep it very short, for me to mention with Arthur was that something as simple as your dad showing you videos. Mm-hmm. You know, forget that it was David Ledbetter. As parents, we forget the potential influence that we can have by inspiring our kids when they are young. We sometimes think they don't always relate to something like that, but you never know what you trigger.
Yeah, well, it's special moments. I even remember when I was a kid, don't know what age it was, but, you know, Sunday afternoons or Sunday evenings, if you're on holiday, you would watch the majors, you know, and there's Tiger Woods and Ernie Els and Nick Price and Mark O'Meara, just to name a few.
Yeah.
And these guys are really fighting to win a golf tournament, and the spectators around there and just the aura that these guys have was just something like when you're that age at like 5, 6 years old, you're just looking and you're like, this is unbelievable. I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting for me that there was a connection with Kieran and golf, which at that point when you were young, wasn't really the golf game wasn't the same as today. It was more known as a stuffy environment. I don't know if I'm saying this right now. But think about this, when you were growing up, golf wasn't like you can just go there with your pluckies and it felt a bit stiff. Yeah, yeah. It felt like you were...
A lot of tradition.
Correct. It felt like you needed to step on, you don't want to step on toes. You know, it wasn't as accessible.
You don't really want kids at the golf club because they're going to just interrupt you.
Correct.
You know, or slow you down on the golf course. There was a little bit of snobbishness back in the day.
No doubt about it.
But it also depends where you grew up, right? So
absolutely. So. Okay, and just to also set a tone for your personality, and Kieran, you must tell me, but I really enjoyed the fact that Isaiah 41:10 mm-hmm. was something very close to your heart.
Yeah.
And it says, so do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you, and I will help you, and I will uphold you with my righteous right hand.
Yeah, so I grew up in a very religious family, more so from my mom's side. And God has always been a pillar of strength for me. I know He's created His own purpose for my life, and I'm just grateful for everything that He's done for me, and can only pay back in the ways that He's shown me my talents or blessed me with my talents, and for me to go out there and live it out.
Well, that's wonderfully an inspiration. So you Ramsig?
Yes.
Good old Joburg boy.
Yes.
Kiro School. Uh-huh. I know it's Kiro Aura because it's a specific school in that area.
Yeah.
And just so that people have a little bit of context as to who's sitting in front of us today, 2022 individual CAA champion, mm-hmm. the first black golfer in CAA history to win a medalist honors at the league tournament, mm-hmm. 2022-2023 CAA Golfer of the Year, mm-hmm. 2022, 2023, 2024, first team all CAA, mm-hmm. CAA Golfer of the Week, the 2024 co-CAA Individual Champion, recently got an Alfield Daniel Championship invite and made the cut.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're the only amateur to make the cut.
Yes.
Yeah. Only we'll amateur to make the cut. And recently, a PGA Tour invite, Puerto Rico in March.
Mm-hmm.
Have I got that summary right?
Yeah, spot on.
Yes. Because how difficult does the Americans make it? It's like you've are the ABC, champion.
So it says, is it Coastal Athletic Association?
Yes.
Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah.
I don't even know that.
Yes.
Chartered Accountant.
Okay, and so I'm just as a highlight, and then we're going to let you just go into this a little bit. But the current landscape you find yourself in is Charleston College Golf for Men's mm-hmm. Golf. You're an Under Armour player.
Mm-hmm.
You also smashed the college journey for golf, which is a rare statistic. And
it's only a couple of South Africans have
couple
done
of
that.
South Africans that's done it that successfully. And I want to talk as with your coach Mitch, that also the grit and the absolute determination under pressure that you have, which is going to play a role in a further conversation. And that's where we find ourselves, and that's Kieran van Wyk. In small summary, a little bit of a journey to this point.
Yeah.
Have I got it right?
Yeah, spot on, yeah.
Okay, so Arthur and I, we want to make this, you know, very relatable. But you get an invite to Charleston, people are still going to hear a lot about you for the rest of your life, Kieran, the way that you are going and by God's grace. So just tell us a little bit. You get there. I'm not talking about the idea of flying over. You get there. What do you do? What does this hall look like? Do you have mates? What do you eat? Is it awkward?
What is your experience?
Yeah.
Take
is
us
it
through
lonely? That. Is it amazing?
I've actually got a really good story.
Okay, well, wonderful.
For myself. So leaving for Charleston was August 2021. And I was about to leave, so booked my flights. Direct flight to Atlanta, 15 hours. So touchdown in Atlanta, and I got an email that my apartment complex where I was staying at, they were slightly behind with the renovations of the apartment complex, so they suggested that I needed like stay somewhere else. So luckily we had friends. My dad has a friend in Atlanta, so he said I should stay there for a couple of days, so we'll move around the flight for Charleston. So I stayed in Atlanta for about 5 days till the renovations was done at my apartment. And my dad booked my flights through someone that he knows that works at Delta. And so the morning of my flight, supposedly, to Charleston, wake up, as usual, go to the airport. I think I had a 7 a.m. flight. And the family that was hosting me in Atlanta asked me for my flight number. And I gave it to her, what I thought was the right one. And she couldn't find it under or for Charleston, South Carolina. So anyways, went through, checked in, actually at the way in, my bag broke in half, had to get a new bag, tape it up, that got sent through. So it was a hell of a morning. I was tired as well, still a bit jet lagged, and went through, got into the airplane. Didn't realize that there's two Charlestons in America. And the flight that I got onto was to Charleston, West Virginia.
And it's in Carolina.
And I'm at Charleston, yeah. South Carolina. So my fault partly too, but I was, as I said, I was jet lagged. So anyways, touchdown in Charleston, West Virginia. And I looked out the window, out the airplane window, and there was a whole bunch of trees. Just a lot of trees. And I was like, where I'm supposed to be going, there's supposed to be ocean. It's like, this is, something's not right here. So started texting my coach. And he told me, I'm waiting for you. I'm picking you up. If you go, okay, go to the carousel and then pick up your bags, take a left, and I'll be standing there. So I go to the carousel, pick up my bags, and I take a left, and I'm looking.
You're still not realizing.
No, I've sort of like caught on, but I was like, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And so
welcome
then
to America.
Yeah. So I pick up my bags and I turn left and I look straight into a wall and I'm like, this is obviously not the right place. So I call him and he's like, oh, did you fly to Charleston, West Virginia? And I was like, looked at my location. I was like, yeah, I did.
How far is it apart?
So then I had to get a flight from Charleston, West Virginia, booked to Charlotte, from Charlotte down to South Carolina. So that, I think I was meant to arrive in Charleston, South Carolina, supposedly at like 9 a.m. I only got in that night at 9 p.m. Because I had to wait. Charleston, West Virginia is not a big town.
Yeah.
The airport was pretty small too, so I had to wait for a couple of hours to get on a flight, then go to Charlotte, wait for another flight, go down to Charleston, South Carolina. So my first few days into college was quite interesting. That night too, got into my apartment. The reception was obviously closed. It's 9 p.m. at night, so I couldn't get into my room. So I slept on the couch. In the apartment where my teammates were staying, but I couldn't get into my own room, so I had to sleep on the couch for one night.
I suppose, and, youngsters, not to the worst.
Yeah,
thing
not not too bad, but yeah, it was a whirlwind experience.
My word! So it started a little bit in chaos.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so now you settled. You there? Take us a little bit through that. How nervous are you? What did you expect versus reality?
Yeah, so all exciting in the beginning. I had a good relationship with my coach at the time. Our team was very new. He recruited a bunch of new players to try and change the landscape of the program. So a bunch of new faces. All of us were new to the environments, which made it also a lot easier in a sense that you're all experiencing Charleston, the same thing, yeah.
Okay.
So it was fine. I think my personality helped me out with the chaos. I didn't stress too much. I'm generally known as a chill guy, so that helped me out. And then the expectations, I didn't really know much. I knew of guys such as Dylan Aidu went to Arkansas. He came back. Garrick didn't stay long there too. So these guys were all in the Golf RSA squad with me before I left. So they familiarized me with what it would be like, but like you don't really know until you're there yourself.
Yeah.
And firsthand, I thought the American people were very friendly and forthcoming. Got a lot of help from the people at the school, orientation-wise, showing you where everything is. So, yeah, I think America's a good place to be. Obviously, first world countries, not as many inefficiencies as South Africa.
Yeah.
The people are friendly. The food is something that I don't quite enjoy, though. I think we've got some really good food down here, and there's nothing like a good braai that you can have with your family on a Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon. And those are the small things that you miss when you're away.
And so you get hand sort of picked, you know. I mean, that was a reality, and it was by a coach called Mitch
Krivilich.
Krivilich, thank you for saying that surname. And he's an Australian.
It's an interesting one, yeah.
He's an Australian,
yeah.
And it sort of helped you from, you know, that he was also out of his own sort of comfort zone, mm-hmm. Or his own home base.
Yeah.
And then you guys made this massive impact because it's a really good golf school and you guys have gone tremendous strides at it and you were part of that. How does that feel to, because like you say, they were definitely in, you know, they sort of reset a while back, mm-hmm. and now you're part of that reset.
Yeah. So going into college, I wanted to find a school that I would get a lot of playing time.
Okay.
I could have gone to bigger schools, but I had the conversation with my dad to go somewhere where, firstly, the coach welcomes me and believes in my ability. And secondly, to get a lot more playing time, to familiarize myself with the American golf courses. You know, the grass is different. So the more you get to play and the more you put yourself in those situations, I think the better of a player you'll become with those experiences. So, Charleston had a complete reset. We had that year when I came in, 5 freshmen. Team was very young, inexperienced, effectively. 1 or 2 seniors. But my teammate as well came from Netherlands, Neville. He was a decent player as well. And I just played my game and luckily things worked out. I hit the ground running pretty quickly, won in my first year, won twice in my first year. And then subsequently I was leading regionals through 2 rounds. Ended up finishing 3rd, but was able to get my team through to the NCAA, the national championship that same year, which was my freshman year. So it was a good start for me. I think we made the national championship for the first time in 20 years or something.
Yeah, I think it was the last time was 2001.
Yeah, something like I wasn't that, even born yet.
Yeah. Good Lord.
So that
anyway,
was
that just that made me feel very old. Sorry, apologize.
So that was a good start for me, and I met a lot of good people through that time.
You know, so you know, I can continue that because we hear a lot in Arthur's.
I also want to add something to that, yeah.
Add something.
So there's a lot of South Africans that actually go to college, but a lot of them don't finish. How did you find, I mean, you're still currently doing it, but how do you find that experience for your future going forward? You get what I'm saying? So like a Dylan Fratelli, no, not Dylan, Dylan Fratelli. Brandon Stone stopped after his first year. Dylan Fratelli finished.
Dylan Knighty also stopped.
Yeah, Dylan Knighty also stopped. Yeah. Gary Kuga also stopped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They all eventually got there somehow, but everyone's different, right? Do you feel like, this is obviously for South Africans, do you feel like going to college separates you from the rest of the South Africans getting to that next level, if you get what I'm saying? So South Africans just staying here, playing local amateur events, you know, playing Big Easy, getting to the Sunshine Tour. How do you think that separates you from those guys? And is it working for you? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As a stepping stone.
Yeah. No, look, I think everyone's journey is different. I didn't think that my journey would turn out to be going the way it is. And it's obviously, as you said, it's not done yet. But my plan was to try and create my path through the American system, the college golf. As I said, I went to a school where I wanted to play more, to familiarize myself with the American system and the golf courses around there. But I think it's different for everyone. Being away from home is definitely, it's not easy. I mean, you're only home for 5 months out of the 12.
Yeah, yeah.
So majority of your time you're spending away from home. But I think also college, not only as a golfer, but as a person, prepares you for life in many different ways. One being you just become more independent. You learn a lot more about who you are as a person and your character. Being presented with tough situations where mom and dad can't help you and you need to fend for yourself and do it on your own. So I think it's a combination of things that'll come together, and it obviously just depends on if you can stick it through. And for me, luckily, I was playing good golf at the time, so that wasn't a worry. I had good people around me, Mitch and my assistant coach JP as well.
Okay.
Him being South African made it a little,
South African,
a
JP,
little
yeah.
easier. So they could have
played on tour with JP for a while.
Is it?
Yeah.
They actually kept me in check, and it made everything a lot easier. But I think the college golf system is a good stepping stone for any aspiring professional golfer. I think the golf courses that you play on, the conditions that you play in every week, it's different. We go to Bahamas, we go to Puerto Rico, we play up in the north in California, we play down south in Florida. The grasses are different, so you're familiarizing yourself with a lot different grass types, playing conditions, which in future will definitely come to help you here.
Hugely beneficial. I mean, your dad, Rodwell, it's Rodwell, that's how you pronounce it. He's obviously played a massive role, and this is actually more of a question to him, but how did you stay, you know, going on to what Arthur said to you earlier, how did you stay so disciplined? Because I'm sure you went through a rebel phase. I mean, I'm not speaking here for you, but how did your dad's relationship and mom play a big role in keeping you sort of grounded, that you needed to see this sort of through? Because I'm assuming there was a lot of sacrifices for this opportunity from your dad's side too,
sure.
To put this together. But we always say, and as parents now, not new one, but one sitting also here next to us, it's one of the most things that you want the best for your kids, and you want them to stick to sort of something. And a lot of kids these days, they get distracted quite easily, you know, onto the next big thing or quick money or quick results.
Yeah.
And I'll finish this before I ask you that question, but your coach said, yeah, he's very professional. Competitiveness and belief is incredible, and lots of athletes have one of these two attributes, but you have all three, and one of the ones being your absolute ability to perform under huge pressure. I know that was a mouthful, but how did you sort of stick to your foundation?
Yeah, look, I've always my parents have always told me to be humble, but it's also a lot of parents can tell you to stay grounded and be humble, and it turns out that some kids circumstances change and you get a bit of success and that changes, but my mom really taught me to stay grounded, just the person that she was. Unfortunately, she passed away in 2020, but she was a huge impact in my life of staying grounded. She came from humble beginnings, so that really helped me to stay grounded and just stay true to the person that I am. I always knew that the mental part of my game was one of my biggest strengths besides the golf swing and everything else. I always knew that the mental side was my biggest strength, and that would carry me through any adversities, as when my mom passed away was one, and challenges that I may face. Yeah. So that's always been something that's carried me through. And then obviously if you truly want to be what you want to become in your life and create your own destiny, you're gonna put your all into it, and that's 100% what I want to do, and I know who I become, where I want to be later in life, and not only the player that I want to become, but the person too.
Sure, I think he's done a tremendous. You know, your parents. I literally, there's nobody else that I will put this onto, because your parents has such a big part in you sitting here with that mindset. I always say, when you're at school, I wish the school could grabbed you when you were younger. They teach you everything, you know, everything, meaning, you know, science, historic, math, and all of that. But they don't shake you to say, listen, whether you go study, and if you go study something, it's just a foundation. After that, you can be anything you want to be. You right now start to become conscious of what type of adult you want to be, what type of life you want to live one day. And I wish the school focused on that a little bit more, where it felt like they just followed a syllabus, and there's exceptions to the rule within the school system when it comes to a particular teacher that maybe inspires or takes more care and time. But I think that's the first part. Forget all the wonderful things I said about you and the achievements that you have earned. I'm telling you now, for your age to be this stable and know where you want to go, I think that's personally your biggest success so far. And that comes down to your father. And what's your mother's name?
Helga.
Helga. And I think it comes down to Helga and Rodwell. That congratulations to them for putting that together, because as parents, we all know.
It's not easy parenting.
Oh, my God. You know, and even parents that really have great foundation in their kids, they still sometimes go off the rails. And in fact, a lot of cases. And I definitely went through a personal rebel stage myself, and I regret it. And therefore, I can't blame my parents, because they gave me the foundation. Your personal success now is that you took it and you're running with it. And that is remarkable, Kieran.
Yeah, I mean, like experiences shape people's life, and circumstances definitely do that. My mom's death, definitely being one of them, changed my perspective on life. It not only changed my perspective on life, which then subsequently helped my golf game in a way. I was just grateful to wake up and experience another day, which really helped me not to be so hard on myself and think that if golf doesn't go well, and that it's the end of the world. It really helped me in that sense. And from then, I actually started to see myself playing a lot better golf, where I became a better player holistically and a better person as well.
You know, I think we've, and thank you for sharing all of that, we've learned in life now that the sort of quieter guys sometimes, and there's, you know, different strokes for different folks, but the quieter guys, you know, they have this immense silent confidence. And it doesn't mean it doesn't come with insecurities, because we're all human. But that is an attribute that I think is tremendous for young people today. And I'm very inspired and grateful for the future of what the youth, you know, if you look at the youth and what the youth has done to golf. And for me, especially after COVID, I don't know, but for me it felt like the COVID period, 2020 to now, YouTube golf, social media, events, live. I mean, think about this, guys. 2020, think about what our reference point for golf was. You watch PJ, you watch the majors. Sunshine Tour didn't even have the presence it has today, even though they were a long-standing tour then.
Yeah, 100%.
But all of these accumulated things grew golf, so the viewership grew for golf, and therefore these platforms can accelerate. The Sunshine Tour can be stepped up, which Thomas Apt and the team have definitely done. And now youngsters like you can benefit from that landscape that's changed. I mean, I checked Garrett Clark just took ownership in Tacoma Golf. Grant Harvett, my sincerest apologies. You've got the TaylorMade signing up these YouTube golf guys in an incredible fashion and much bigger deals than some of the PGA guys. And now you've got the TGL, you know, and Lyle is heavy into that world. But now you've got TGL, which just FYI, got more views than an NBA final over the weekend. By the way, first event, 1.8 million average viewers at any given stage and 2.3 million in total.
Wow.
You know, not a bad start. But that's Rory and Tiger's ability to...
Correct.
To get eyes onto it. So sorry that I'm going on about all of that, but that world is the world you live in right now. The older generation, call it 40 years, 35, that are playing golf, it's not past them, but you're in that world right now where all of this is just getting growing. Water now and growing.
It's exciting.
Tell me a little bit, if you don't mind, your own vision and idea in that world of golf outside of the formal championships and the tour events and all of that.
Yeah, I think social media can be a good or bad thing, obviously depending on how you use it. But Americans especially, I've learned over the last couple of years, are big into social media and broadcasting. And it's something that I still need to get better at. I've tried to really expand my social media base and my following. I get told from time to time I need to do a better job and post more.
I can say that to you too.
I'm not really someone that likes to share too much on my personal life, but more my professional life. But also, in America, you got the name, image, and likeness, the NIL
For sure.
World. So in order to capitalize on that and get the most out of it, I think you really need to dive into that world and create your brand constantly and improve it the whole time. So I think golf has really taken a different landscape. It's changed tremendously. I saw the other day on YouTube, Grant Hovrat was doing a video with Tiger Woods.
I saw that.
What TaylorMade did.
Yeah, it was the DOD, driver off deck
session. Yeah, it came out a couple of days ago, and you think that was just a guy like one of us, a normal guy that's changed his path and his life, meeting an idol like Tiger Woods.
He was in the same path as you were.
Yeah.
Grant.
Really?
Yeah. He was going to be a professional golfer.
And it's interesting to see how all of that just changed through social media. And I think it's really something that youngsters as well, and I see a lot of youngsters on TikTok as well, posting challenges, doing play a hole with me or play five holes with me. Have really started to do that, and I think that's just the way going forward. We have technology at our fingertips, and I think we should just use it effectively.
Kieran, I'll tell you there, and for maybe your own mind shift change there. Social media, you know, Arthur's younger, he uses it personally a lot better. I think professionally he needs to get a lot better. But personally, he shares every now and again. I'm an absolute non-sharer. I think 4 years ago was my last post.
Well, you're about to get your pensioner's card soon, so...
Yeah, fuck you, okay? Fuck you, okay? Damn it. But the thing that's for me that's really changed, and one when we started this, Arthur and I, it was awkward. It's still awkward for us. I honestly, when he clips something and it's just me, I won't even like it. I'm so awkward with things like that. And but what really is that, don't try and fake it. Just be who you are and put that journey on. And to me, Bryson DeChambeau changed everything.
Yeah.
Bryson DeChambeau went from sort of known as an arrogant people. That's what he was known for, was people perception.
Yeah.
But actually, he's this incredible guy at heart, and incredible, and that reflected on his channel.
Mm-hmm.
What he does for other people, and I think that you have that same ability. You are so uniquely so, Kieran, sitting here, that you are, I mean, you are like literally one of the top three guys in the amateur world that is talked about in South Africa, and that is incredibly inspiring to be at that position. But that's why I started to say to you, and I meant it with so much love, you have achieved nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. You have achieved a highlight reel, okay, that will never be taken away from you.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to where your vision is going, you've done fuck all.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. That probably starts for you in Puerto Rico in March.
Well, at least proved himself at Leopard Creek.
Yeah, listen, no. I'm
humbling you down a little bit. You know? But I was just pouring the water.
I hope I'm not coming across like a doer when I say all of these things.
No, for sure, yeah.
But in a sense, you're pushing. You get what I'm saying? You're pushing him to say, keep going, theoretically, indirectly.
Yeah.
So, and it's good motivation, right? It's not like he hasn't done nothing and you're going at him. He's done a lot.
Yeah.
And you are pushing him to say, keep going.
Yeah.
Indirectly. So yeah, it's for a good thing.
And Bornay might want to take this out, and you might feel...
No, we're not taking nothing out.
But since it, like, for instance, all they said there was, you know, and I get it's part of the highlight reel. Black golfer, black golfer, black golfer.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, that's your highlights on a lot of websites.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I get it, and here's where you need to now correct me, but I'm like, he's done, besides take the black out, Kieran van Wyk has achieved incredible results for such a short term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does it make a little bit sense what I'm saying? Well,
it does, yeah.
You know, for me, it was just, it felt like when you lead with black, it takes away from the, for me. It takes away from the person.
Mm.
You know, it's exactly like any negative connotation too. No, it's the person. It's not necessarily the race around it.
I think you should comment on that.
Yeah, so I don't know what your feeling is on that.
Look, this the sport that we play, as we know, there's not a lot of successful black golfers.
And the problem is the best one ever was black.
Yeah.
And now it's almost like, and it's weird, and it happened to James Kamte, for example.
Yeah.
He even played a round of golf with Tiger Woods because he just had that season or two where he was just winning and doing good things. And now everyone's talking about the next black golfer that's...
Oh, the next Tiger Woods.
The next Tiger Woods. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because someone wants the next Michael Schumacher or the next Tiger Woods Michael or the Jordan, next Muhammad Ali or the Jordan. You get what I'm saying? I mean, Steph Curry is so good. He's amazing. I mean, the talent that that guy has, but people still talk about Jordan and people still speak about Shaq. And you get what I'm saying. So people are waiting for the new thing and they want that different person like Tiger Woods again. So it's a bit of like pressure on that person. And I think James buckled under pressure.
Yeah.
Personally, I know him personally, so I can say that. So I think it's just... We all know how social media is and the news media. It's people are just looking for stories so that people can click on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But carry on.
Give us a little bit more.
Like I said, the reality is there hasn't been, especially in America as well, besides Tiger Woods, there hasn't really been that many other black golfers since then in the college system as well. I don't know if you saw there's a APGA ranking as well, of which I'm leading that ranking. But yeah, so I think it's like a breath of fresh air for people around in the US. Even though I'm not home, I'm not a African American. I'm a colored in South Africa, but I represent that title of being black, and I take it on proudly.
African.
I
we are African.
Yeah, I advocate for black golfers and South African golfers abroad.
Yeah.
And I wish to inspire not only in South Africa for sure, but also in America for them to look up to me and see that I came through the ranks of the South African Golf Development Board with many other guys that are not white, they're black players, I would just wish to inspire them and see that someone can do it. There's one of us that is able to do it.
And for the younger generation too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, golf is growing in this country.
Same as what CNM is doing for rugby.
100%. Yeah. I think every person who has that opportunity to inspire, and if they can do it right, it's just so good for the country and for the kids.
Yeah.
You know, growing up and having that drive to look up to someone and say, well, if he's done it, I can do it too, because I've got an example. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great. And I think this is just a great conversation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And just a last comment from my side, and I'd like to get your final opinion on that, because what inspired me to even talk about this is Sia. When Sia became captain, everybody said the first black captain.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were in conversations, like, oh, what a good black player he is. A black player on his position, you know, as an eight man, you know.
Flank.
Oh, listen to me, sorry, flank. You know, it's not a traditional black position.
Sure.
And now, that's gone.
Yeah.
When last have you ever heard Sia the black player? Sia the black captain?
No, he's our captain.
He's just what he is the now. Captain. And I suppose you're quite right, and we're not delivering it from our perspective and opinion on this. But to me, that was the part that I really enjoyed. You know, when your mates, he's not just your captain. He's like, you're that kid, you look after your kid. You'll leave him with your kids without any knowledge of him.
Yeah.
He's got to that world now. And his genuineness, and even over holidays, you know, when you see him without shoes and he's playing amongst, you know, in Zimbabwe. He was in Zimbabwe on holiday. And he picks up the kids there and starts playing soccer with them and stuff. Yeah. That to me is just, that's the man he's now become.
Yeah.
And if you look at all of them, including Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods just put his head down and did what he needed to do.
He also went through the same thing. When he was a kid, he could hardly get onto golf courses.
Yeah.
It was frowned upon because he was African-American and when he came onto the scene and started dominating and winning tournaments, who was the favorite every week?
Yeah.
Probably those guys who were chasing them off the course when he was a kid.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? That's the mark he had in American golf.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted Tiger to win every week.
Yeah.
But it's against their, let's call it, belief 100 years ago, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I think it's great. I mean, difference is so good.
Yeah.
Difference is so good.
Ernie and Tiger... he speaks about this, Ernie, where in the beginning he felt like, how unlucky is he that Tiger
was in his era?
Then
he would have been world number one.
A long time.
He would have won a green jacket.
Think about that. It was Tiger and Ernie at some stage.
And then when Tiger had his off day, then Phil was there.
Correct.
To take away.
But then what Ernie said was, I'm not giving reference on exactly, but within a couple of months or year, whatever that time. He had an interview and he was like, it went from, can you believe my luck that Tiger Woods is in my era, to how fortunate am I?
Yeah. Made him a better player.
To watch this guy do what he does.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and I think people forget, they must go and watch the President's Cup YouTube moment. People forget the absolute battleground between Fancourt and Ernie Els, and what that did for the game of golf with Gary Player and
Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah.
And the decision they made to share the cup.
Yeah.
People, we live past it.
Yeah.
I was so fortunate to be at that course while it was happening.
Oh, wow.
We only left at 9 o'clock that night, me and my dad. And my dad's best mate was the greenkeeper for Fancourt and George. And in that 2 weeks, he had to be the greenkeeper for all three courses.
Sure.
And we got an opportunity to...
That's such a battle, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone wants Tiger to win because he's Tiger Woods, but you also want Ernie to win because we want to win the President's Cup.
Correct.
Yeah. It was like, I don't mind if Tiger wins this hole and they win, but I really want Ernie to win.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, we'll take the draw.
Yeah.
It's like Man United against Liverpool this weekend. We'll take the draw, but we should have won.
It's when your two mates, you play so shit on the day together that when one wins. Yeah, it's like, there's no winner here. We just both play so shit today.
Yeah.
So sorry for directing a little bit.
I want to get into golf now, man.
Yeah.
I want to get into golf. I'm going to start that off. Your invitation to Leopard Creek.
Yes.
What a week to play at Leopard Creek out of all the years. I mean, how hot was that week? I would have died. I mean, I caddied the year before and I died, but it was probably 8 degrees warmer this year. So talk to me about that week, because I think mentally that must have been brutal.
Mm-hmm.
The heat was a massive factor. There were a couple of amateurs. I'm sure you wanted to prove yourself back at home as well, and also test yourself against professional golfers, which I'm sure you have the mindset of a professional golfer anyway. But talk us through that.
Yeah, so I got the invitation through...
Who calls you for that?
So I actually contacted Grant Hebben.
Yeah.
And then he... That's
the chairman of golf, RSA. Yes. Yeah.
And then he spoke to Johan Rupert and he granted me the invitation. So thanks to him. Didn't formally get to say thank you.
So literally, Johan Rupert. Grant Hebben gets it from Johan Rupert.
Yes, 100%. Okay. Yes. But just 1 second. What Johan Rupert does for golf in South Africa without recognition is unbelievable. In fact,
probably more criticism.
Yeah, well...
But for golf alone, it's
I mean, there's so many hidden things he does that people even know about it. And he doesn't even, he's not on the highlights reel. Mm-hmm. So thank you to him. But
thank you, carry on, Grant.
Yeah, so got the invitation.
So what is it, the WhatsApp? Is it an email? Sorry, Kieran, I want details here, buddy. You know what I mean?
So I was in America still when I asked Grant Hebben about a month before the Daniel, actually. I texted him.
That's probably a bit late as well.
Yeah. And I texted him, can I get an invitation? I've got the PGA Tour start coming up in March. I want to get some game time in, since it was our off season prior to my text to him, for about at least a month and a half. So I wasn't playing any tournaments then already. So I said I want to just get some game time before I head into my college season. Thankfully, I got granted the invitation. Had to make quick travel plans to get here. Arrived here the Saturday. Drove to Leopard Creek the Monday.
And that was the week of Leopard Creek?
Yes.
Okay, so it was
quick, yeah.
I still
needed to write an exam the Thursday.
Before you flew?
Yeah, before I flew. I wrote an exam.
Because you're in business administration,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Made quick plans to write an exam, did the exam, packed my bags, and then flew. So got to Leopard Creek Monday. Practice facilities, awesome. One of the best in the world, my favorite personally.
100%. Did you play the par 3?
I did, yeah. I did. It was awesome. All the replicas of the famous holes in the world. So that was fun. And then obviously went into the tournament crazy hard. I think first round I had the second last tee time, 120. Was boiling by the time I pegged it.
Got it in those stripes, puppy.
Yeah, which I actually preferred playing in the afternoon, because the ball flies a lot further in the afternoon, but then obviously you at lower altitude in Malelan or where Leopard Creek is, so it was actually easier for me to make the adjustment, being from Joburg, that the ball was flying similar distance in the afternoon when it was so hot, compared to the morning when it would fly a little shorter. So yeah, first round I played really well. I shot 2 under. I could have been 4 under. Yeah, I 3-putted 17, whatever, shot 2 under. But yeah, the biggest challenge that week was the heat. They had air conditioning, like cooling units, like cubicles on all the par threes.
Oh, Ethan.
Yeah, so that's where the water.
Yeah.
You get, there's like bananas and snacks and bars and water for the players itself.
Yeah.
So I remember, not talking about myself now, but when I was caddying last year, I couldn't wait to go get water in that. It's like a tent cubicle thing.
Sure, yeah.
Go just spend another minute in here quickly and cool down and then go back out.
Yeah, it was really old. Because you don't see it on TV, do you?
No, you won't see it on TV. It's on the side, yeah.
Okay.
But all the scorers after every hole, there were scorers from Nomads on every hole, and they would tell you, if you're waiting for a par three, please make sure you go stand in the in the AC
cubicle
unit. And some guys, the English guys, I played with Matthew Baldwin. He went in there a couple times and he was just laying down in the cubicle unit. He was like,
yeah, his, we can hold it a little bit better.
He's never experienced heat like that. And they had towels on every hole, cold towels, ice towels on every hole. So you'd find yourself playing with that, stick it in your shirt, you would play with that too. To cool yourself down.
Yeah, but they're organized, huh?
Yes, and Leopard Creek
on another level, Kieran.
Yeah. It was. It's always. I've played African amateur there, and to think you go play African amateur and you experience what it's like to be in that environment, the tournament environment, and then you play the Alfred Daniel, and it's a step up. You got the courtesy vehicles driving you around, and that's just what it is. It's a great experience.
And you probably pinch yourself a few times?
Yeah. I pinch myself, but at the same time, I see myself there. I see myself doing that.
I like that.
This is what I want to do, and this is the life that I want to live for myself. So just familiarizing myself, as I said, always trying to learn.
Did you play any practice rounds with anyone that helped you?
Because I came late, we had to book practice times because there were pro-ams as well. But I played with Heinrich and Keenan Davidson.
Oh, Brandon's, okay.
My first practice round, and then I played with Nikhil, my brother, and Yurav also the second practice round. But only played two nine holes, and then straight into the tournament. Mm-hmm. But
and you were still fighting jet lag.
Yeah.
And where do you sleep? Where do you stay?
We stayed in a B&B just outside. Okay. About 10 minutes drive towards Malelan.
Okay.
You can't really get any accommodation that late in Leopard Creek. No. So.
Obviously shooting 2 under the first round, knowing that the cut is, I mean, every professional golfer or golfer knows where the cut is after their round. I mean, it's a quick calculation. What was that feeling like on the second day, knowing you're playing for a cut? I mean, you're not playing for prize money, but just to prove yourself and have that achievement and say, listen, I made the cut for that week.
Yeah, I've had experience playing DP Tour events. I've played 2 SA Opens prior to this Alfred Daniel. So I think what really helped me too was teeing off in the morning, the second round. You're off to an early start. You don't really have time to think about all those things like
you don't have the whole day.
You don't have the whole day where you see scores coming in, where the guys are lighting it up and playing well. So now you subsequently putting yourself under more pressure. I think getting off to an early start that morning and just getting straight to it helped quite a bit. I teed off on the back nine, which is generally the scoring nine, a lot easier. So got off to a good start and then was able to. I think I was 4 under with 3 holes to play, and I came in limping in. I made 3 bogeys coming in to make the cut on the number. But I think managing my expectations was a big thing. I had one of my friends on my bag, so just keeping me calm, talking about rubbish, not really.
Okay.
You were thinking about the cut the last few holes, though.
I was, yeah. I mean, you got hole 7, which is arguably the toughest hole on the golf course.
Yeah,
The par 3. If you can hit that green, middle green for 4 rounds, you're winning. And if you don't, if you're really scared, just hit it left and short and chip and putt.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? That hole is so tough.
Yeah. But it's,
I mean, 8 is also not easy. Like, you can put yourself in such a bad position off the tee or on your second shot.
9's not an easy tee shot either. You got those, well, where I was hitting it, you got the bunker and the hazard where you like got to fit it in right in the middle. Otherwise, if you want to hit 3, would you lay too far back and you make it a bit tougher. But it's all, if I look back on it now, it was just a mental challenge. If I was level par with 3 to go, I think I would have played those holes much differently as I was attacking more. But I made birdie on 6 and I was 4 under for the tournament with 3 to go. And your mind tells you, okay, like, you can relax. Like, I knew the cut would be level or 1 under, probably level at that time. And I'm like, I think I'm safe now. But it just shows you what that does. And I made 3 bogeys coming in, but luckily it was still good enough.
And were you tested at a particular point and moment in that week?
As I said, the first day I got off to a decent start, so not really any adversity early on. And then I played nicely the second round, so not really any moments where it really shifted for me.
You know how many people, sorry, this is very random now, but how many people, if they flew from America, landed on the weekend,
17 excuses,
driven to Leopard Creek, had that heat, oh, I've got jet lag, oh, that's why I missed the cut, I didn't prepare well because, you know, of circumstance. I didn't see him make one excuse once.
It's
crazy.
It's a great pickup there. And I just want to quickly then pause there. Why do you think your brain and your mindset is so geared for this? We've had many discussions on this. There was a lot more. You've got no fluster. What is it, fluster? You've got no... You don't buckle.
Yeah. Sure.
You stay calm. Why does that... Because the reason I'm bouncing on that...
It's an important
topic. It is literally the most relevant thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Whether... If all the greats we talk about, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, you go back to all of their books, I've read each and every one of them. Not one of them have said, my skill is better than anybody else. It's my brain. It's my mind. It's my ability that under pressure to perform. It's my ability to step away from the situation, understand what I'm in for, and make that decision. And not having the regret moments later to say, shit, I just wish I took a breath and understood what my challenges were in front of me. A lot of skills, I can show you golfers today with swings that will outperform any other swing in the world. Try and get them under par with a bit of pressure under their face, they buckle.
Yeah.
So why?
Yeah. Or they have a bad round and they've got a stupid.
And they've got a stupid. Or they have jet lag on a Sunday and they go, I am got every reason to not perform this week.
Mm.
Why? Why is your brain like that?
And there could be an answer. My psychologist, I read books. I just.
Your dad, mom.
Sometimes I ask myself the same question.
Okay. So it's sort of. Okay.
I think it's a blessing.
I get that.
It's a blessing. Sometimes I ask myself the same question. Many people growing up, my classmates always said I was very confident in the way I presented myself. I don't know where that comes from. It just is what it is, I guess. But at the same time, it as I mentioned earlier, it truly comes down to what you want. And it also, as Arthur mentioned, speaking of psychology, envisioning yourself and where you want to be, how things are going to play out. And then I've got a tattoo on my arm that says believe.
Okay.
And I've always sort of made an oath to myself that if there's anything, there's a lot of controllables in your life, and believing in yourself and having that self-belief is one thing. As hard as it may be to do sometimes, there's you can control that. You words of affirmation and telling yourself that you can do this plays a big role. Also, I had a really good semester coming in, so my confidence was quite high. I believed in my abilities. I know what I'm capable of doing. So that does help when your form is quite good. I played a tournament in the Bahamas, played really well, where I earned the PGA Tour exemption. So I know I can compete with these guys. They're obviously a little bit better than what I am, but I know I've got the game and the mind to be where they are and compete.
So just two more things from my side. One, how do you feel about general pressure, life pressure from the outside? Meaning, you are in the highlight. You're in the spotlight, sorry. You're in the spotlight. There's been many players, and I don't want to particularly name any names. We've mentioned them on shows before, which massive hitters, long, have all the foundations from support financially from a young age, gets opportunity in quite a few stages around the world, but literally haven't made it.
Mm.
Do you feel a little bit of outside pressure from the world? You know, fans, so professional environment, fan. I'm a fan.
Sure.
Of where you want to go. I want to see that you get into the top 10.
Sure.
Do you feel a little bit of that?
Yeah, for sure. There'll always be external pressures, sponsors, club sponsors, clothing sponsors. There's always people watching in, people that are funding you to travel all over the world. There'll always be those external pressures. But I always tell myself that I like to keep it as simple as possible. And as you spoke about before, I actually had a conversation with Theo Bezaden. I work with him through Golf RSA. A couple of days, 2 days ago, I saw him. And he asked me a similar question, and I told him, I always like to refer back to a baseline. And whether that baseline may be in regards to my swing coach, where I have a specific maintenance bay, or with my psychologist, always trying to refer back to something that got me to where I am today. Yeah. And always going back to that as the foundation to my success or what I'm going to achieve, which always simplifies it a little bit more for me.
Yeah.
And takes a bit of the heat off the moment and everything that's happening around.
So and just the last one from my side. I know Tiger Woods is one of your favorite players. Mm-hmm. I also know that you have PGA ambitions and you've had it for a long time.
Yeah.
I think when Arthur was referring a little bit earlier about some guys choosing to stay local and stuff, I'm now assuming, yeah, but I think the reason you are there, I know from a young age, you had this sort of PGA in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Has any of that, one, changed? And two, give us something not to keep you accountable on, Kieran, because who the fuck are we to have any judgment on your life anyway? You know, your dad and your mom, they and your brother and the people that loved and got you there when you were younger, they have a input in that way in your life where they can call it judging. You know, they can judge you a little bit because they changed your nappies, they made your food 17,000 times over, they showed love and support where your parents them needed it. Those people are different. Fuck people like us, you know. But what is your own accountability? What have you got? What's your vision for the next 5 years for yourself? And if I say 5 years, it's a fucking stupid number I'm putting onto it.
Could be the next year or 2
years. Where do you want to go?
Ultimately, my goal is to play on the PGA Tour.
Okay.
And that would be via the America's Tour, Korn Ferry.
Okay.
To eventually get onto the PGA Tour. So that's what the next 4 or 5 years look like for me. I'm going to try and explore that career path for myself in America once I graduate to turn pro, and I've got a couple opportunities over there that's probably, it will be set in stone pretty soon for me to afford myself the opportunity to then play on either of those tours to eventually get to the PGA Tour. But it's always, like you said, for any golfer, really, the PGA Tour is the penultimate tour that you want to be on. So that for sure is the goal.
Yeah, and you're also going to a very different PGA Tour from since Lev joined.
Uh-huh.
And I don't care, you know, I know I'm not an ex-professional or anything like that, but the fucking PGA Tour has lifted their game, and not by their own accord, not by their own reasons, not because they woke up one day in a strategy session and says this is what we have to do. Fucking competition. Fucking competition.
Love golf.
And it's exactly what happens in any, there could be another Kieran van Wyk in another 5 months that is even fucking up your foundation, and that goes, fuck me, okay, if you want to come for me,
competition's good. And I don't mean
in an ugly way.
Competition's good. That's why I play sports.
It's very good. Yeah. So I think we will follow up with you on that. And please, when you are much more important in the future, don't forget to come back here and speak to us again. And I know that Arthur has got something to add there, but I just want to give you an opportunity if you want to. But who do you want to thank? And I will kick it off by saying to your dad watching, if he's going to watch this, that as a dad, I want to thank you. And I'm inspired by you as a dad, that I can grow up a kid and have the foundation that you did. So Dad van Wyk, well done en baie geluk. En dit is vir my een absolute voorreg om, mm-hmm. om te verstaan wat sy rol hy gespeel het in jou lewe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's many people I would like to thank, and what I'll probably say, I'll leave out a few names here, and but I think it starts from the earliest days, as I mentioned, Johan Wolfhard, who got me into the game of golf, my teachers at school, a teacher that really stands out for me, and he was our sporting director for all sports, but mostly spent time with the golf team, Mr. Ferreira. Thank you to him. And then to Golf RSA, the national squad, Mr. Johan Rupert, who funds the whole program. Big thank you to him for affording us all the opportunities. I don't think I would have firstly been at Charleston if it wasn't for the squad, because they afforded me an opportunity to go play overseas, where I then got scouted by my coach. So a big thanks to them and the SAGDB.
Who's SAGDB? Sorry.
The South African Golf Development Board. Which
I've seen that. They also do the Blind Association.
Yeah. So big thanks to them too. And then, like you mentioned, my dad and my family, my girlfriend
and your
too,
mom
and everyone back home was continuously supporting me. I'm truly humbled. I'm grateful and appreciative for their support in my little journey in my life that I may go on.
And I'm very sorry about your mom, yeah, you know, when you lost her in 2020, because I know as a young man, there's nothing more that you want to see them see.
Yeah.
You know what you do, and it's not to show off, maybe a little bit, but I know that there's, you probably have moments where you're like, oh, I wish I can just quickly let her see where I am and I know
she's watching over me. She'll always be with me and very close and dear to my heart, not only on me but for my brother and my whole family, and I just try each and every day to continue to make her proud.
Well, from my side, God's favor.
Thank you.
In geseende, ek hoop is regtig 'n geseende tyd vir jou. Kieran, dankie. Dankie dat jy 'n voorbeeld kan wees, you know, for younger kids.
Mm.
Honestly, I you know, sometimes when I watch these edits afterwards and I'm like, shut the fuck up, Albert.
Well, there were two moments where I was like, is it your happy pills have just kicked out? Where have you gone? Okay, come back to the couch, okay? But
I apologize. No, but I
still love you.
No, but I think that there is some troublesome views on certain youth paths for me around the world, and for somebody like you, for another young guy to look at that and say, well, I don't have to fucking be in M3 this afternoon and fake myself as to how fucking cool I am.
Mm-hmm.
Do the fucking work.
Mm-hmm.
Get the fucking results.
Mm-hmm.
The shit after that will come.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to start by telling me, bully, you know, look how cool I am, I'm going to bully you because I'm the cooler kid. Get the fuck out of my life. And thank you that in a humble way, that's now the new cool. The new cool is to be cool under pressure. The new cool is to see something through.
Mm.
The new cool is to honor our fathers and our mothers.
Yep.
The new cool is to say thank you. Not to be a
mm-hmm.
You know, sorry, Monet. You know, but I am inspired
don't
by
worry,
that.
That will be the beep.
That will be definitely a get a beeper. Maar baie dankie, Kieran, vir wat jy doen, en dankie weer eens vir die geleentheid wat jy my ingee, en Arthur, om met jou 'n bietjie te praat. Ek waardeer dit baie.
Thank you. But I love that. And you know what the nice thing is? That's why there's a human behind the show.
Yeah.
It's all about being human. Not flashy, let's not flash things. Let's not be pretentious. Every human being is real.
Mm-hmm.
Show your realness. Show who you are and be a person. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't care about all the other shit. So there's my happy pills missing a little bit. But yeah, from my side, well, I first enjoyed this. I thought this was really, really cool and interesting, and also really good topic points. We're waiting for, and personally coming from the Sunshine Tour, seeing the development players, I've got a lot of development player friends, and you want them to do well, because it's not just you want them to do well for a better life, you want them to do well to showcase that
and inspire,
and inspire, and it can be done. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And sometimes it gets fallen short because they are good enough, but that pressure hits them too hard. You know what I'm saying? And it's not easy at the same time, because you almost feel like you're walking on eggshells. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You'll understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But well done to what you have done so far.
Thank you.
To do what you have done, to finish, I think you're going to finish what you're going to do, is amazing. And I really, really hope for South Africa, for a player of color. Mm-hmm. And listen, this whole player of color thing, it means something to South Africa. It's not portraying an image to you.
Sure.
But we want you guys to do well and showcase it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's, this is our country, right? So for me, just carry on being who you are, do what you do, and please don't overthink things as well, because that is the biggest nemesis to this game.
Yeah.
Stick in your lane, do what you do, stick to your processes, be humble.
Yeah.
That overthinking is a huge thing, because that thing can just eat you. You can lose sleep, you can lose focus. Do what you're doing. I think you're doing an amazing job. I'm excited. I've been following you. And I'm excited to carry on watching what you can do. I think
Thank you, Arthur.
It's an exciting space.
Yeah.
We're waiting for more South Africans to showcase their abilities all around the world.
Yeah.
And it's exciting.
Yeah, this thing is that, for me, this thing is that a lot for golf, SA, in the last year with Liv. And for almal wat ook luister en kyk, ons weet, dis nie maklik om 'n uur te sit en te luister na die kak wat ons hier praat. Dis lekker om te luister na die guest. But we do appreciate it so much. Every minute that you spend with us. And be critical. We want you to be critical. We want you to tell us, fuck off with this and this
Albert,
better.
Albert, just calm down.
Yeah, or Albert, just calm down. Or talk less. And all of that. I mean, my mates were very honest with me about a couple of stuff over the holidays. And we don't do this. We want to get it better so that we can get more views. We want to do this better so that we can completely take your time not for granted. And that you can walk away there. Even, you know, if we have 10 minutes of just talking a bunch of cock, it's good for men to go into that space too, and just not have anything relevant.
A light bulb has just gone on.
Yeah,
we need to do a weekly talk cock session, I mean, just for our sanity.
But it is it's an incredible game, and that's why we sit here and bring this to you. We love it just as much as you do. Seën julle jaar and bless everything that you're doing, and thank you for everybody that takes the time to watch, comment, like. We appreciate it so much and bless you tremendously from our perspective. Thank you, Arthur.
I think, let me finish it off. I think Kieran's definitely a person to look out for. I think he's going to have an exciting year. I'm sure we'll post all his social media handles for him there. But I know I've just said this, but I'm super excited for him, because he is around the last corner in the race leading. He just needs to now keep his legs going.
Yeah.
Get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So good luck. We root for you. We wish you the best. And we will see you at the Masters one day.
Yeah, for sure.
we'll keep you company, okay? And talk shit with you to keep you sane.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for creating this platform for me to be, like you said, my authentic self. Sharing my different ideas and views in my journey that's only begun. Thank you.
It's such a pleasure, Kieran. I'm sitting here this morning, or sitting here this afternoon. You know what just hit me here? And I say this from such a genuine place. We've had incredible people on the show. I have never felt that I felt they're going to make it. They're going to get a sponsorship from a good club. They're going to get nice clothing swap.
And we've interviewed a lot of people.
What I'm feeling today is that...
Just please don't put too much pressure on him.
No, he contacted... What's my fucking pressure on this guy? I feel like you could do the type of deals one day that a Tiger Woods can do and have done. I feel that you will fall into the Ernie Els, Gary Player. And hear me out. I'm not talking about your energy with Gary Player. I'm not talking about... You would fall in that same category of absolute greatness one day. And he wasn't just a good golfer. He wasn't just a good college player.
He's a good, yeah.
He was one of the single best players the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
He has made his mark with golf clubs and courses around the world.
And foundations.
His Autism for Els Foundation, which Lyle was just in December, played with Ernie four holes. That impact is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That you can build an entire development in Coastal and bring your family compound there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. When I sit here this afternoon, I feel that's the type of success that you're going to have in your life.
Yeah, but also to add to that, I think even if you do not play golf eventually,
something.
You're still an amazing human being.
Something is
going to be successful regardless. And that's not a hint to say you're not going to make it. Just sitting here having a conversation with you, you're an awesome person. So whatever you decide to do, get what I'm saying.
I'm so grateful you agreed for me and Arthur to get 10% of your earnings for the rest of your life to come onto the show.
Why do you always just back down on my comments?
Sorry.
I was sharing a moment and then it was
your turn. We have 10% of his earnings for the rest of his life.
Well, there's a book. Just sign that book. You're going to sign your life away.
Sorry, Arthur. My apologies. Bless you, Kieran. Again,
thank you.
Monet and Lyle also for behind the scenes today. Thank you for being here. Yeah. He came as a fan today. Don't let him tell you anything else. But thank you once again.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. It was awesome.